The fact that it's not easy, it's actually better because it makes you value it so much more. So much more. Because when you get something easily, then you kind of give it for granted, let's say. But when you really struggle, then when you get it tastes much, much, much better.
Hello and welcome to the CDE podcast. Today we're speaking with Lorenzo Ugelli. He's an exterior designer at Volkswagen and the man behind the VW ID Everyone concept car. Hello, Lorenzo. How are you today?
Hello. Yeah, I would say it's quite a nice day. You cannot complain. It's been great.
It's very nice to chat to you. You're one of the younger designers that we've spoken to across this series of interviews. And much of what we'll talk about today is designed to be useful for young up-and-coming designers and design students. So I'm hoping you're going to have some very useful, relevant experience for them. Just to begin at the beginning, tell me where you're from originally and how far back you can trace your love of cars and design.
So basically, I come from Emilia-Romagna, so it's the Italian region. I come specifically from the province of Ravenna. From a very small city, but is actually still, connected to the car industry. Because actually, my hometown is called Lugo di Romagna, and is the city which gave Ferrari the Prancing Horse, which is something which is not really well known. I just think it's an interesting quirk about this place. But I would say that I've been a car lover ever since. I think maybe it's kind of a cliche answer, but I was the kind of kid, you know, that like when I was riding in the car with my mom, I was like pointing at every single car on the road. And I remember perfectly, the manufacturer, the model, the price, the power output and so on. So I've always been like fully nerd into cars, and it's been my passion ever since. I think is what it makes it good is that then I've always knew at least the field where I wanted to work. So I was never like looking around for something. Like I knew since the beginning it had to be with cars.
You were absolutely certain from the start.
Absolutely.
When you live in proximity to Ferrari, I'm sure it just seeps into your brain from a very early age.
Yeah.
When I was young, when I used to sit in the back of the car, I had a booster seat to help me sit taller. And when I got a bit older, my mum said, "You don't need this anymore." I was like, no, I want to keep it because then I can see the wheels of the cars. I need to see what different wheels all the cars have got going on. So yeah, I can relate. I think most
people...
So I
guess you're a tuning stance guy then.
A big stance guy when I was 2 years old. Yeah, exactly. do you remember some cars that you really loved growing up? Do you remember one of the first cars that you're like, wow, that is incredible?
Yes, actually. So before... I was really like into more professional and more detail about cars. I remember as a kid that I was watching at some magazines, and I actually wasn't aware that the car which were interesting me, they were concept car, which is really weird in the end, because I remember being amazed looking at this Pininfarina concept. It was called Pininfarina Rossa, which is a speedster Ferrari designed by Ken Kuyama. And I was looking at this car as a kid, and I was like, oh my God, this thing is insane. And then I was also wondering, like, but why can't we buy these things? I mean, it's only, you know, like a spaceship and so on. And then there was another car, was still in this period, which I remember fondly, which was a Corvette Stingray concept. I think it was from Giugiaro, which was like blue with a... It was like a blue concept car with this glass canopy.
I think I remember, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're really talking about some time ago. But, this made me think since the beginning, you know, that I liked concept car. And then, of course, when you grow older, then also you start to be a bit more nerdy, you know, like in terms of the cars which you like and so on. And then you experience some cars like in real life, and then you start to appreciate the driving and so on. And kind of switched also more into the driving then later. And through some friends, they made me experience, the British cars, which then it became, like my biggest passion of work. So I experienced Caterhams and Nobles and Lotuses and so on. And so then I was, okay, I like this. And so I become... So yeah, like I was starting to love concept car. Then I became like, okay, I'm a lightweight cars addicted. But design wise, I've always been appreciated concept car in general, the research of beauty. And it was, of course, catching since I was a kid at school all the time.
It's unrestricted design, isn't it? That's what's appealing about concept cars.
Yeah.
I just thought of this when you said it, but when you're really young and you fall in love with cars, it's really just aesthetics, right? Because you don't know what it's like to drive. So it's just, what does it look like? That's our first way that we experience cars.
Yes.
And then you start driving, and then you start factoring other things, and you start thinking about them in a slightly different way. But when you fall in love with cars as a kid, it's about what looks cool, what looks interesting. Yeah, interesting. So where did you study? Where did you study and what did you study?
I was studying graphic design. Then through an internship, I realized that it wasn't what I wanted to do. Then it came to my mind, you know, to try to connect like what I want to do. So it has to be cars. I actually like to draw car design. Then it started. And then I started, you know, to have a look at the possible school, to try to convince, of course, the parents, you know, because it's not maybe the typical safe career choice, you know, which a parent expect, because maybe, I don't know, they think more that you want to do like law school, medical school, these kind of things. So it's quite tricky also, you know, to try to convince it to do something which is so emotional, but maybe you also have a high ratio, high failure ratio, because we have to be honest as well.
Close.
It comes with risks, but yeah, I was studying in Modena. There is this school, ISAM is called, so it's Istituto Superiore di Scienza dell'Automobile, and it was 2 years diploma, which actually gave me then like a head start. I mean, to try to apply to do some internships, to participate to some competitions. So then it started with that.
And here you are. It's so interesting to hear all the different routes into this industry, because I've spoken to designers who went straight into a design course. That was the first thing they did, was car design, because of course there are specific courses for that now.
Yeah.
There's plenty of designers like yourself who started in a different kind of art and then found their way into it. When I spoke to Harm, the legendary Porsche designer, he had no formal education. And one day he just went to the Porsche factory and just left his portfolio by the gate.
Yeah.
So that was, it's not really like that anymore, unfortunately.
Absolutely no. What were your times.
simpler times, exactly. What was your first job in the industry where you were able to call yourself a car designer?
I basically started, of course, to apply to various internships. And I managed to get the first one in Pininfarina, which was a really, really great experience. So it was really feeling like a dream, especially because, you know, it's a legendary coach builder, you know, always connected also with Ferrari design and so on. So we were really like, oh my God, you know, like I'm really in a legendary place. So I've been working there. I had an opportunity also in McLaren. So also, you know, getting used to start to travel, you know, and to leave home. So, you know, moving first to Torino, then moving to walking, and then I went to Munich.
Yeah,
because then I found this job opportunity with this Italian supplier company. Basically we started with like working on details. It was for Audi. With an external contract, of course. So yeah, like I was doing some proposal for like rims and details and so on. My true passion, true love, of course, it was a bit more about doing a full exterior. But then something crazy happened, because basically while I was there was a internal request to make some proposals for a golf. Because this company Esiste, it's related. I mean, it was related also a lot with Volkswagen Group and Walter De Silva. So yeah, being Munich, a branch of the company, I actually got the opportunity to be picked by Mr. De Silva to be sent to this Braunschweig studio. So we are talking already to go close to Wolfsburg. So yeah, and it was actually, you know, a crazy timing, because I remember that like from Munich, I was supposed to be moving to Ingolstadt to a newly open supplier office. So then, of course, I was starting to look for like a flat, you know, and travel to Munich. And travel from Munich to Ingolstadt by train to go to visit a flat. And I don't know. For some of the listeners, if they know, finding an apartment in Germany is quite a tough journey. So yeah, once I finally found the place. And I was about to go to Christmas holiday, then actually got a call and I've been asked, so do you really want to do exterior? Because if you want to do exterior, at the beginning of the year after Christmas, instead of Ingolstadt, you go to Braunschweig because Mr. De Silva liked your stuff and he's asking to having you there. So I was, oh my God. So of course I canceled everything. Yeah. And then, it was like really unexpected trip.
Yeah, it's a fast jump.
Absolutely, a fast jump. But I was like, okay, of course. It's my dream. I have the opportunity to work, for one of the legends. I was like, come on.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. And of course, at that age, you accept everything. Like, who cares if it's uncomfortable to move and jump around? You really want to fulfill your dream. So, yeah, I just went. And then it was an amazing experience. Then I was there 1 year and a half. We worked a lot on some Volkswagen Group projects. Really fun times. We've been working on some crazy projects. I've been moved then to Pininfarina, still with the supplier. Then Pininfarina also, basically, they remembered about me because of my very, very first internship. And of course, like I was a supplier, so I was also curious and keen, to make the career step into try to have like a direct contract as well. And also like a funny story is that the moment I arrived there, of course I was pushing like crazy, I really wanted, to prove that I was good. And after 2 months, I got like a job offer to join Pininfarina directly. Funny story, the first day of contract, it was my birthday. So I was like, okay, so that is a sign. Nice. And then I've been staying in Pininfarina for roughly 4 years, 4 years and a half, which was, again, a really, really nice time. I'm really happy because it was a very nice school. I met some of the greatest legendary designers as well. People which design like, some timeless Ferraris, some timeless Pininfarina concept cars. So they really taught me a lot, built some really good connections, true friendships, which are like longstanding today still. Really, really nice. I actually was lucky enough to be working on a couple of show cars there. So like a first highlight, which was really unbelievable for me, it was to like stand at the Geneva Motor Show. Together with the media and seeing like my full exterior of a Gullwing super coupe show car.
Yeah.
It was called the Hybrid Kinetic GT concept being unveiled live. And it's like, oh my God, is this really happening?
Yeah.
I was dreaming and I was traveling, through Europe like crazy to try to fulfill my dream. And here I am.
Thinking back to you being a very young boy,
unbelievable,
seeing that Pininfarina concept in a magazine and it's sort of sparking something in you.
Yes.
Kind of weird to think that maybe some young boy saw your one and the same thing's about to happen again.
Yes. And it was really crazy to really see, like, what was nice actually? The nicest thing, it was the moment where I was placing the Pininfarina badge on the car, because there was a colleague, he was like giving me the badge, like, this is your moment. Appreciate because it's very rare. Apply the Pininfarina badge with your hands on the fender of a coach built super coupe. It's like, wow,
now it's official. Speaking of concept cars, there's a very special concept car downstairs from us at the moment,
absolutely,
which I think you're very proud of, and it's the ID Every One.
Yes.
This is a massively important car for VW. Talk me through what the design brief was in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, so the design briefing, let's say, it wasn't the easiest of them all because like the name says, when you try to do a car which can suit, if possible, everyone, it's quite of a tough job to do, let's say. So, yeah, we were trying to tackle the subject by looking at various customer targets. So, we were really trying to find a way to find like a package to create a car with a small and compact footprint, but flexible enough to be able to be enjoyed and used by really, when we talk about age, we can be saying from 18 to 80 years old. So it could, I mean, it should be like the car can be your first car. It can be the first car from like your, your sons or daughter. It could be as well like the car for like a B2B business. It can be like a delivery vehicle. It can be fitting, you know, like a normal commuter situation, or as well it can even be maybe the car of your grandpa.
Absolutely.
Because it needs to be for everyone. And I think it's actually bringing back the main values of the brand, because Volkswagen is the people's car.
100%.
So we're actually doing the Volkswagen, let me say. So it's really, it's a privilege really to be able to work on such a project. It's like, you know, the most important project you can do for a Volkswagen, because it's the car for the people.
Most definitely. It's the thing that VW does best, in my opinion. But as a designer, when I think about this design brief, you've got, it has to work for everyone, number one. Number two, it has to be very affordable at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
These feel like quite restricting things to work with as a designer. So how do you, and actually the end result is a very, very charismatic piece of design, in my opinion.
Thank you very much.
It's a really, really exciting, interesting little car. How do you find ways to be playful and express yourself as a designer when you're still working with like quite specific brief like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first of all, we're trying to work a lot with the character of the car, which means that, like, in the, how to say, for this specific car, we were trying to bring like emotions and charisma, especially through the lights, because we really tried to give this kind of human touch, you know, I mean, this human feeling with the car. But then as well, when we want to talk about like the budget situation, of course, is something which you should consider as a designer since the beginning. So since day one, the briefing also from Andreas Minte was, this car has to be an entry car. So we should think about designing a car which is cheap to build, which maybe has already, I mean, is conceived since day one to be put together with maybe less panels, less piece, you know, let's design it in that way and not try to make maybe a car with, I don't know, many applied extra decoration and details, which then maybe because of budget are going to be left behind.
Yeah.
So let's try to do it from the beginning like that, which I think is actually what has been giving us the chance so far, because the project, of course, is ongoing, to go with the production version, which is really, really, really close, because you cannot simplify more than what you see.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine one of the most frustrating parts of being a designer is making something you're really proud of. And the engineers say no, and the money guys say no, and then the end product looks a lot different. But actually, there is a responsibility on the designer to think forward when they're creating this thing and make sure that it is made in a way that is practical and can be achieved. And that's clearly what you've done with that car. For me, a big part of ID Everyone and ID 2 All is connection to the past. I think it's generally understood at VW that the first wave of the ID cars, the ID 3 and like really impressive cars technically, but from a design standpoint, perhaps just didn't connect with people in the same way. And I get the impression that you've made a really deliberate effort to connect this car to the past of VW. So how do you do that without just making something that's a remake?
Yeah, I mean, actually, this is what we try to do, and it's really nice to hear also from you that you're not talking about deliberate quoting, because this is what it is in the end. Because let me say, it's kind of a greatest hits, but it's not literal at all. Because we just took the philosophy, the cues, which doesn't mean to copy the line. It's just, you know, when you look at a specific part, when you look at the back, when you look at some other areas, you feel the connection, but it's actually different. So it's still done with a modern twist. So for example, when we look at the front, we kind of combine together two cars, because we have, first of all, a modern reinterpretation of the Golf Mark I, which is a super iconic face, clearly recognizable as a VW, which is also something which helps us to go away to this maybe too common nowadays, face, you know, with a single straight bar connecting side to side, because what makes a VW is the fact that the lights are like completely on the same line with the logo. We have this, and the black frame, what makes it Volkswagen, specifically more like the Golf 1. The fact that we have the lower part of the headlights lower than the mask. So gives a lot of character, differentiates the car from, you know, the mass, makes it clearly recognizable as a VW. But kind of lost my train of thoughts, let me say. Going back to the other car, we also use the Golf Mark IV, because the Golf Mark IV had this headlight shape, which was this kind of rounded rectangle, let me say. So we kind of integrated, you know, these two shapes together.
Yeah.
So, again, doesn't look literally neither like the Mark IV, neither like the Mark I, but you have a bit of sprinkle here and there.
Exactly that. And if you're
just a sprinkle here and there.
Just a sprinkle. If you're a car nerd like me, I can look at that concept and I can go, that's a little bit up, that's a little bit Mark I, that's a little bit this, that's a little bit that. But what I find so interesting is normal people who are not crazy about cars, they kind of understand it subconsciously. Like I really think that's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Now, you would think that to most people, it doesn't matter if the new VW has a connection with the old VW, but it kind of does
matter.
Does. People, it just needs to look right.
Yes.
These are the things that make it look right to everyone, even people who don't know cars or car design.
And this is actually something which we've seen happening, you know, through like the live reveal, through, you know, the media days and so on, that like really... this is a kind of a feedback which we got many times, that like people, they're telling us, this looks like a real VW. I really reconnected with a VW, even though they don't know clearly why. So the feeling of the mark is there. And actually, I mean, if we want to bring a big name to the table again, which happened yesterday, Mr. De Silva himself. So, I mean... The legendary Volkswagen designer, you know, which was in charge of the app as well, which is my personal favorite modern Volkswagen,
nice.
Which I still find timeless. And he was my clear inspiration, especially for the rear of the car. He came to visit us just to see this car because he was so curious to see reality. And I mean, this day gave me goosebumps because the first thing he told me, he put the hand on my shoulder. He said, "Bravo, you guys made a real Volkswagen."
Wow.
What more can you do?
Yeah. That's the seal of approval.
Really? I mean, yeah. Unbelievable. So, yeah. When the man tells you it is a Volkswagen, they're like, okay, then I think as a team we made a good job altogether. Could have been worse.
Doing something right. I think the up's one of my favorite VW designs from the last few years as well.
Yeah. I love it.
And that concept of just getting the most possible space out of a small footprint.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to make that look good. You end up with a box on wheels a lot of the time when you're focusing on spaciousness. But of course, you have the advantage of working with a bespoke EV architecture, which
exactly.
I guess is kind of freeing as a designer. You just kind of, you can package it in however you see fit, right?
Kind of. Let's say that is not maybe so free as people think, because sometimes you have even this kind of misconception, like, it's an electric car, therefore it doesn't need air and cooling and so on, which is complete wrong, because in the end you still need to have like cooling packs and so on.
And crash protection and all
exactly,
that stuff.
Exactly. But in the end, what this kind of platform is allowing you, which is helping you as a designer, is that we tend to have like this longer wheelbase, wider track, because of course you need to accommodate, you know, the skateboard platform of the battery. So this is already giving you a car which sits nicely planted, which gives you then shorter overhangs, wheels at the corner, wheels tend to be bigger. So actually what we are focusing also, you know, with the new design director, is also the main pillar is to make cars which look stable. We really want to focus on the stance as well. So this platform is actually supporting us.
It's a thing that can be ruin a great design, right? Just when the stance is wrong, the wheels aren't quite fitting out
about
the arches. It must be so frustrating.
Yes. I mean, and it's all about proportion and stance because I mean, like even from like the student's point of view, the first thing they should teach at school, and usually do, of course, is that the most important thing is the proportion. You have proportion, then you have surface treatment features, and then you have detail. But you need a good base.
Mm.
Because if you, I mean, if you don't have a good base, you know.
Well, it does. It's a lovely chunky little thing. It really, really is.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how that project develops. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing the production version. I hope it is as similar as you've described. I believe you. Final thing.
Let me know.
As I said, you're one of the younger designers that we've interviewed during this series. You've had an amazing career already. I'm interested in what advice you share with young designers, design students, when they ask you how to get where you are. What was the thing that you like to tell young designers?
I hope it's not an overdone reply, but I would definitely say be stubborn. Be stubborn and be passionate, because something which I didn't mention before, which was quite important also, is that wasn't easy. Really wasn't easy. Because actually, from my second internship to the final internship, which landed my job, I actually been unemployed for a year, which was a really tough time when you see your peers, your colleagues finding a job and going to work at the factory and going to work like in the low studio and so on. But you are stubborn, because like, this is what I want to do. No matter if I get closed doors constantly, I kept on doing that. And I'm really happy that I did.
Mm.
Because otherwise, you know, the easy way out would have been, okay, this doesn't work. I will look for another job and then maybe this becomes a hobby. But it wasn't, I never considered this. So actually it was a really tough moment where I remember that I was pushing like crazy at home, working alone, working until 2 a.m., criticizing my own stuff, redoing my stuff. So, you know, being my boss, let's say, you know, I was criticizing my stuff, redoing it again, 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 then sending again, then contacting people on LinkedIn, on mail, ask around, try to network, and say, no, we are not hiring. No, it's not good enough. No. Until, yes, it's nice, but you need to try. And I really feel also like it's a tough moment nowadays for the industry, but you need to be stubborn. You need to be stubborn, because if you keep on doing that, eventually it will work.
Hmm.
That's my belief. And it's not easy. And in the end, also, if I can add, the fact that it's not easy, it's actually better, because it makes you value it so much more. So much more. Because when you get something easily, then you kind of give it for granted, let's say. But when you really struggle, then when you get it, it tastes much, much, much better. Really, it's really worth it.
Lorenzo, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks to you.
Thank you so much for listening to this CDE podcast. Please like and subscribe to discover new episodes and upcoming events.